Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Knowles coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight to cover the Rowdies like I usually do, and I am here tonight with my usual co-host.
Yes, Carlos, sir.
How are you doing this Tuesday evening in a very, very cold portion of January?
My goodness, it's freezing. I know it's cold down there, too. So I'm not going to, you know, feel bad for myself, let's say. I chose to live over here. You know, it's fine though. It's been weird. I'll tell you what, DC and in Northern Virginia is not an area that gets a lot of snow. So when it does happen, it's just highly unprepared. So the sidewalks are all messed up for the next week. The joke is that the kids are never going back to school because there's another weekend of snow coming up to a much lesser extent. But, to anybody that's interested, like if for whatever reason you are interested in what's happening over here, it's just kind of a funky like infrastructure. Like the snow comes, it's freezing temperatures right now, so the roads are icy and the sidewalks are icy. I'll tell you what, it's been great people watching from the ninth floor of my apartment, watching people walk outside and struggle not to slip at the front door. So if nothing else, it's been mildly entertaining during my remote work today. More importantly, James, the Rowdies were in action recently, an official preseason matchup that happened. We have a couple lineups to talk about, which are going to be really interesting to break down. We can kind of take out what we can from that. Obviously, closed door, none of us were able to be there, so we can, you know, analyze exactly what happened on the ground. But we can talk a little bit about what happened, some of the goals, the goal scorers, my favorite part. By the way, this is fun stuff. This weekend, I keep seeing like the highlights and the buildup for the Gasparilla weekend and everything, but separately from Gasparilla, which I'm going to be back for. I'm so excited. The Lightning are playing an outdoor game. I feel like this has gone under the radar somehow in Tampa sports still, despite Tampa being like a really big hockey town now. That's just a fun thing that we can let the RBLR Bolts podcast talk about. That being said, just keep an eye out for that in Tampa. It looks like it'll be a really good time. I'm going to try and sneak tickets in the last second when I'm home this weekend. But James, for the important part here, the RBLR Rowdies podcast, the green and gold. It's too cold to put on the jersey, so I'm wearing a sweater. So I'm just going to sling it over my shoulder for now. Let's jump into it after you tell us how you are doing in what apparently is a frigid Tampa Bay area as well.
It's as frigid as Tampa Bay gets, I think. That's fair to say.
Perfect time for an outdoor hockey game, by the way.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because my wife got me tickets, so I will be going to that. I don't think that anybody could have predicted when they announced the date that it was possibly a date that would definitely be likely be in the 30s. With the temperature going down, and according to Dennis Phillips, snow flurries possible within Florida, not the Tampa Bay area, but within Florida. So I think, the people that the NHL have paid off or bribed, whichever weather god they needed to get the right setup here. It's
the weather machine in full swing this year.
So I am looking forward to this whole weekend. Gasparilla, followed by a Tampa Bay Sun game. I don't know the last time that soccer was played the same day of a Gasparilla, probably in like the 90s or earlier, but that's awesome. Very much looking forward to that. Sunday will provide us time to convalesce and then a game outside at Raymond James. So it's going to be a very busy weekend, as Carlos said.
By the way, the Sun game, forward to it. Very close to all the festivities.
Yep.
Obviously being in downtown. With the parade, you know, not too far away on Bayshore and all the hecticness that happens in downtown and Soho over there. I think it'll be a really fun atmosphere obviously the whole city is a good time this weekend, but throwing a Sun game in there too to cap off a fun day of activities. I think you have a really good weekend. But anyway, we can save that for you and the RBLR Sun crew as well to talk about the Sun game this weekend. It'll be fun, James. It'll be a fun weekend.
Absolutely. I am looking forward to every part of it. But no part of it so far, great transition, includes the Tampa Bay Rowdies at this point. So let's talk about the Rowdies. That is who we're here to talk about. And we have a game to cover, like Carlos said, not as much information as we would like, but plenty that we can still pull from. And there are two big pieces of news, I think, related to the Rowdies, or excuse me, related to the Rowdies and related to the league. So those are going to take up the vast majority of our time. And everything else is going to be not filler, but it's just going to be less important than those two items. They are pretty.
No,
filler.
Nothing on this podcast is filler. Everything that comes out of our mouth is gospel and highly important and need to hear. So if you skip any part of this episode, you're probably going to miss something life changing.
Exactly. Life-changing. So let's get into that. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube, any major podcast platform. And of course, please follow RBLR Sports on all your social medias at RBLR Sports. There is also an RBLR Rowdies if you would specifically like to follow us. Let's get into that Rowdies news. The first piece, this is the bigger one of the two for me, a signing. We have probably filled out the actual defense part of our defensive line. There are wingbacks, I think, still to be signed, especially on the right side, in my opinion. We will see how that works out. Maybe I'm wrong. But the point is that Brian Schaefer has been brought in from FC Cincinnati on loan. Brian Schaefer is, I think, a very good signing, not only because of his pedigree, which we'll get into, but also because he is a Florida native, went to USF, and then moved on into the professional ranks from there. This is the kind of, I mentioned last week, there were two players that Loudoun United signed. Actually, one of them was a teammate at FC Cincinnati's reserve team with Schaefer. And then the other that Loudoun signed was a player from USF, possibly a teammate, I don't remember, but possibly or probably a teammate of Brian Schaefer at USF. Point is, we have signed a combination of Noah Adnan and Sal Mazzaferro, these two players from Loudoun, in Brian Schaefer at the Tampa Bay Rowdies. So I'm pretty happy with that. And it really good player for this level, in my opinion. He was playing, like I said, with the FC Cincy 2 team when he was, I believe, drafted from them 2 years ago and spent the last 2 years on the cusp of trying to break into the FC Cincinnati team.
Yep.
They are one of the better teams in MLS, I will point out. So their defense is relatively good. I believe that they're even spending DP money on a defender, Miles Robinson, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of money there. And that means that it's harder to break through, too.
Bringing him in on former Liga player, by the way, yes. Brian Ramirez. Lots of money going there. Anyway, yeah. Back to Rowdies.
So bringing Brian Schaefer in on loan not only gives him playing time, which is I'm positive on because he is a Florida native, USF Bull, but also this is a local player coming to play for the Rowdies. That's what I like to see. He has roots in the area here. Let's all be pretty excited about this is basically the opinion that I'm trying to get across. But I'm very excited. Carlos, I don't know how you feel about this. I think in my personal opinion, if we're going to go with the 3-5-2 that we expected, we just did, if you didn't listen to this, by the way, we just did our projected starting 11s last week. So go back and check that out. But I think that I would change my defensive unit based on this to Nathan Dos Santos out left.
Okay.
With his left foot, that makes sense. Leland Archer in the middle, very tall, able to head everything away. And Brian Schaefer on the right side. That is my back three. Lawrence Weick was the one who was previously starting there. I think that he offers more options with his versatility. So that's why I would put Brian Schaefer in the back line and have Weick for other places that he might be needed.
Mm. You anticipated my question. I was going to mention if you want to go back and change your back line because of the signing. My third, I agreed with you last week on Dos Santos on the left, Archer in the middle, and then I disagreed with you and I put Yannis Lehrman on the right. I truly do not know enough about Lehrman or Brian Schaefer to make a judgment call just based on talent alone. But everything I've read about Brian Schaefer over the last few days, after the announcement 5 days ago, is incredibly positive. Seems like there's incredible upside. You mentioned FC Cincinnati being one of the best teams in MLS, obviously hard to break through that way. It's really hard just making your way from the MLS super draft from college, breaking into a first team in MLS, especially as like spending goes up in the upper echelon of MLS clubs and everything. Like it's going to be tougher and tougher for a lot of these college standouts to really break through with these MLS squads that draft them. It's not that Cincinnati thought, you know, any less of him or anything, right? I think it's important to note that this is a loan, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want to, you know, throw away the Brian Schaefer project after, you know, a couple years, because I think they see a lot of potential in him. obviously he's not getting the playing time on the senior squad, but he's gotten plenty of games under him with FCC too. He also got 7 games, I believe it was, on loan in the 11. So he has a little bit of experience at the USL championship level. I think there's certainly going to be a jump from MLS Next Pro games to USL championship games. I think there's a good jump in quality from those two divisions. But based on, you know, the small sample size we have from his Indy 11 games, just looking at the numbers, it looked like he was a consistent and solid piece on the back line, which is really, really interesting. He's a tall guy. Looks like he can move pretty quick for his size. He is the James Knowles archetype for a Rowdies player, obviously, with his connections to the area. Not from the Tampa Bay area explicitly. I think I want to say he's from Apollo.
I think he's from Jacksonville area.
Atlantic Beach. Yeah, Atlantic Beach, Florida. Stand out, obviously, in high school, and then made his way to USF, where he was a local guy and probably played a preseason game or two against the Rowdies and in the almost annual Rowdies USF matchup in the preseason. So good to know he's familiar with the area. He's familiar with the state. He knows, you know, the culture, I'm sure, at least to an extent around the Rowdies. And I never really take that for granted with guys coming to, you know, my club, right? There's a club with a lot of tradition and history and, you know, a great, well-established fan base in the Tampa Bay area. And it's nice to know it's a local-ish guy, certainly with local connections, making his way back to the area and having, you know, what I hope is one full season with us on loan. The worst part is when a player gets really, really hot with us on loan and then they get recalled.
Happened before.
Yeah, I feel like it's happened multiple times with these loanies. I can't remember. I this is probably just me speaking with the few examples I have in my head, but there's not a ton of loanies I can think of that became notable contributors and played with us for a full season, right? That being said, the ones I'm thinking of that got recalled back to their, you know, main clubs were a lot of attacking or chance creating players. And I feel like those are easier to recall when you see the numbers, right? Defenders might be easier to keep around for a while. If he's playing well, you know, being part of this great shutout run that we're going to have this year to break the record that we did back in like 21, I think.
There we go.
Maybe it's 2020. I think it might be easier to keep that quiet and, you know, keep it low key so that Brian Schaefer sticks around for a while and doesn't get recalled to FC Cincinnati. Obviously, you know, want all the best for the kid. So if that happens, good for him. But I'd like him to be on the Rowdies as long as possible if he's, you know, playing as well as I think and you think he can play for us. So it's a long-winded way of saying I'm excited. Seems like Dominic Casciato's kept his eyes on him. Although, fun note, maybe this is coach speak, maybe he's being serious, but I feel like every time there's been a signing and I look at the Rowdies article, he's like, I've been tracking this guy ever since he was drafted, or I've been tracking this guy for a number of years. I'm sure I believe it. Brian Schaefer is the guy that he says has been tracking since he was drafted by Cincinnati 2 years ago. Delighted to have him in our group for 26. Quote, he's a physically dominant center back that did well on loan at Indy last season. So I'm excited to get to work with him and see what he can do in green and gold this year. End quote. So all good things, James. I don't have a ton to add. But it seems like this is a positive one. And like you said, probably rounds out the core of this back. Well, not the core, the entire unit of what will make up the back three here. Right.
Yeah.
Between Dos Santos, Learman, Wyke, Leland Archer. And of course, Brian Schaefer. Now, I feel like you have a good 5 pieces there that you can rotate in based on, you know, the amount of games being played in a week, the Wednesday, Saturday shift. I'm comfortable with a lot of these guys, at least on paper. We'll see how it plays out for preseason and into the start of the year. But I think there's a lot of reason to be comfortable with the back line at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big fan. I've already said I'm a big fan of this signing, but I think, it does complete us back there. And just to, because we already had it lined up from last week's podcast, the back line is Leland Archer, Dion Acuff, Nathan Dos Santos, Yanni Lehrman, Gianni Nigro, Charlie Ostrom, Lawrence Wyke, and now, obviously, Brian Schaefer. That's a good group. That's a good group, if you ask me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, obviously we have our question mark around that right side, you know, the right wing back. I think Akoff would be more than serviceable in that role. And we talk a lot about age, right? And, you know, this roster is overall probably a little bit younger than last year. And probably Akoff is one of the veterans that stands out. I want to say he's 33. But early, you know, on the ground sighting seemed like he could be a great piece and isn't really someone we'd have to worry about fitness wise, I believe. That being said, I think you just want another piece to be comfortable with, you know, on that right side in case someone goes down, there's an injury. You have a lot of games in 1 week, right? We'll have to see what that looks like. I'm curious to see if there will be another signing or if this is kind of what we roll with. I'd imagine there's a trialist or two that makes his way in. Maybe we're just comfortable signing a trialist that can play that on that right side to be a depth piece and run with Akoff as a starter. Or maybe there's a starter coming in over the next week or two. Who knows? My money, James, based on the amount that's been spent, presumably, again, we don't have a number, but based on the big names that have come in and all the announcements that have come in already, I'm going to take a stab in the dark and just say I'd put my money on a trialist being a depth piece for that right side or something like that. Or maybe there's a trialist like a, you know, Juan Tejada is a famous example in my head, right? Who came in and was trialist and ended up being an incredible starter and contributor. So maybe there's someone like that who can fill in on that right side as well. But I think generally we have what we'll see on the field for the majority of the year, which should make sense at this point in the year, right? We're almost into February. We are comfortably a week and a half into preseason. The Rowdy social media is putting out great content, by the way. Go show them love on Instagram and Twitter and everything. There's a mic'd up training video with Marco Micheletto, which I thought was funny. So I think it looks good on paper right now, James. It's just a matter of seeing how it starts to look on the field. Because we've said that before. We probably said that around this time last year, right? Looks good on paper. Looks good on paper. But, you know, we saw how last year turned out, obviously. We saw that the talent didn't necessarily translate to a ton of goals and great defensive performances. But, you know, I think already you're looking at a younger squad here. A lot of Dominic Casciato's guys are here, right? So there's not really a ton of excuses around, you know, not being able to bring in the right pieces. Like, you're bringing in all the right guys, right, that you want to bring in. So I think there's a lot to be excited for because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Carlos, do we want to get now to the second portion of the Rowdies news, which includes some lineups that are, feature all of these players, obviously, a good number of trialists, but there was a little bit of a question mark for me just because of the list of players. I didn't necessarily see a 3-5-2 out of this.
Yeah.
But it can combine everything that we've talked about for the players that we've brought in so far into a look forward.
Yeah. It really, really interesting here. This is straight from rowdysoccer.com. This is from their recap article. January 23rd, preseason matchup that was moved, I think, a day earlier or something. Not that it matters for the fans. It was closed door against NYCFC at the Waters training facility, I believe, where I believe NYCFC was actually training for a majority or for a chunk of this preseason. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Which might explain why you see a lot of Rowdies training content from Al Lang and stuff like that, as opposed to the Waters complex. Nonetheless, Rowdies and New York City FC squared off in this preseason matchup, the first one of the year by, I think, all accounts, unless there was a secret one. And they played to a 2-2 draw. It was a really interesting read here to kind of break down these lineups. I think we can go one at a time because there's a first half lineup and a second half lineup. It was a quick preseason game. They only played two 30-minute halves, so, you know, a one-hour matchup here that was good, I think, just to get the legs going for both sides. Rowdies scored both of the opening goals here, with Pedro Dolabella scoring off of a header on a corner kick. Obviously, midfielder getting up for a header, great stuff. He's a tall, lanky kind of central midfielder, so I'm not surprised by that. I mentioned that when we signed him, that he's a guy that can add another piece to the aerial threat on set pieces, and first goal of the preseason, and, you know, proves that to be a serious factor of his game. MD Myers scored a couple minutes later from a cross from the right side. Right footed strike. Good to know he's getting the, you know, goal scoring machine warmed up early as well. Obviously, we'll expect him to score a bunch of those. New York scores two. I have no clue what happened there. I don't know. I wasn't there, but it doesn't matter. Point is, two goals scored for the Rowdies, tied against an MLS squad for, you know, whatever's that's worth in preseason. More importantly, the guys are getting minutes under their legs and running around on a field against an opponent that's not in green and gold. Awesome stuff. Dolabella, first goal off of a cross from Micheletto. And then Myers gets goal number two off of an assist from the trialist in the first half lineup. Let's talk about that. I have something to mention about this. I don't know who the trialist was, but I figured, you know, they're throwing it across from the right side. James, he said across from the right side. Feels like a right wing back type of play. If you ask me,
we can only assume and hope at this point,
right? I'm speculating, right? So James, let's talk about these two halves. Again, we weren't there, but I just want to break down the lineups a little bit and see kind of what we can make of this in our head. And if you're listening to this, play along, because I think this is a fun experiment to kind of recreate maybe what happened against New York City FC in this preseason matchup. So first half lineup, and this is just the name, so don't attach a position to it other than Jamali Waite being in a goal. Jamali Waite, goalkeeper. Listed in order on the Rowdies website. Sebastian Cruz, Yanni Learman, Leland Archer, Alex Rodriguez, trialist, Pedro Dolabella, Marco Micheletto, Lewis Hilton, Russell Cicerone, and MD Myers. Okay. Maybe you can take, like, I don't know what you can take out of this, right?
It's very difficult to actually place all of that.
Absolutely. I don't know what you can take out of this because I think I can point to a couple guys in the second half lineup, which is basically just everybody else, that could probably be starters. In my head, I'm thinking, okay, first half lineup, maybe it's just we're running with the starters off the rip, right? I see Leland Archer. I see Jamali Waite. You know, I see Cicerone, MD Myers up top together. Maybe that's the direction they want to go early on. Again, first preseason game, right? So not a ton. Lewis Hilton, Marco Micheletto, Dolabella. It seems like a lot of the guys we'd expect to start. But there's some exceptions, right? Sebastian Cruz is in there. I think that's an interesting bit. The only two explicitly defensive players in that first half lineup were Yanni Learman and Leland Archer. To me, James, that indicates that either this trialist was one of the back three, if we're running a 3-5-2 or whatever, or Sebastian Cruz was playing as one of the back three as a center back.
Yeah.
I think that's more likely, right? Based on the fact that the trialist whipped in a cross to get MD Myers a goal in the first half of this one. I'm going to guess that means we're thinking about using Sebastian Cruz as kind of a Lawrence Weick type player as well, right? He can sit back. He can kind of be in the defensive midfielder. But my guess is that he was playing center back in this first half of this preseason game. How well he did that, I don't know. I mean, I believe both New York City goals came in the second half of this game, or at most one of them, one of the two. I don't know how well he played it, but something to take away there that I think we can infer that Sebastian Cruz is being thought of as a potential piece of this back three, or more of a kind of utility player, like a Van Kaziel from last year, right? We can play defensive midfielder, kind of play in the back line explicitly, maybe even throw him on the right side, who knows, right? I think that's one of the more interesting takeaways for me in this one. James, can you make anything of this?
I mean, I'm not necessarily, I don't know if Cruz would have been one of the defenders, but I do understand what you're saying there. And I honestly, at this point, would anything shock us, right? Because we don't know. I don't think that that's out of the realm of possibility. I just assume based on where I've seen Cruz before that that was probably not the case. In all honesty, it might have been Alex Rodriguez playing as one of the wingback spots, maybe a trialist filling in. Pedro Dolabella is pretty tall. Maybe he was one of the defenders. we can't really put anybody in any particular place other than players that we know play in exact spots. So MD Myers was not a center back. We can say that much, right? Yeah. Russell Cicerone was not a center back, but
yeah,
I don't know. Alex Rodriguez, I'm assuming, was one of the wing backs. I don't know on which side, and who's to say where the trialists fit in to try and make this a more viable lineup. I really can't say, but Cruz could have been a center back. He might have been higher up. It's impossible for us to know, and we're just going to have to wait and see if any of these trialists turn into, let's say, real names.
I'm working my way backwards here, right? Obviously, you mentioned, well, you have Jamali Waite in goal. Cross that one off. MD Myers and Cicerone, both strikers. Okay, you can cross those guys off. Lewis Hilton's not playing center back or wing back or anything. You can throw him somewhere in the central midfield. Marco Micheletto as well doesn't, to my knowledge, has never really been in consideration of a wing back type of role or anything like that. You can probably throw him somewhere in the middle alongside Lewis Hilton. Pedro Dolabella is a midfielder, typically in the central part of the field, but he's also played the wing back role before for North Carolina FC. Maybe they tried him out here in this one. That's possible. Trialist, question mark, right? Alex Rodriguez, James, you would know maybe a bit more about him than I do. I know you mentioned he could have been a wing back. I always thought of him as more of like an attacking piece explicitly, kind of an attacking midfielder explicitly. Maybe do you know if he's had kind of that wing back experience before?
I would assume, based on where he's played with the Rowdies, that he was out wide. And he also probably, unless he's had a growth spurt, possible, probably wouldn't have the, he's a younger guy and he was smaller the last time that he was out on the field for the Rowdies. So he might have bulked up for all we know. And maybe we'll see a different player when we actually get into see the teams play in one of these preseason games, let's hope. But I'm not sure. We're not sure right now, again, where this was. My assumption, though, based on what we have seen, is his most likely option was out wide.
Yeah. So I'm assuming either one of Dolabella or Rodriguez were out wide, and then the other one was in the midfield, right? Like in the central part with Hilton and Micheletto. Learman and Archer, surefire on the back line. I don't know if Sebastian Cruz ever played out wide. So that's why that's kind of like working way backwards. You're left with Sebastian Cruz and unnamed trialist, right? Unless Rodriguez and Dolabella were both out wide, which doesn't feel particularly likely to me. You're left with Cruz or this unnamed trialist on the outside or the center back role. A lot of puzzle pieces to put together here that might not be worth anything at the end of the day. But a fun mental experiment to think about where these guys actually are. That's why I'm left with maybe Sebastian Cruz, as to my knowledge, being this kind of ball winning center midfielder, center defensive midfielder kind of guy, maybe being able to slot in back there. Context clues, trialist whipping in the ball from the right side just feels like a right wing back type of moment there from the summary. So again, we'll keep an eye on it, but interesting first half lineup to say the least. Good to know they got two goals, right? One off of a set piece and one off of open play.
Exactly.
Against the unnamed New York City FC goalkeeper. Cool. Fun. Exciting. Guys getting legs under them. James, anything else on this first half lineup?
No. The second one also threw me for a loop. So we could jump into that.
the second one's also interesting. And I feel like there's some semblance here of working your way from back to front. Obviously starting with a goalkeeper, and there's a couple defensive players here. And obviously the attacking players listed at the end. We saw this in the first half as well. Again, part of the reason why I'm thinking Sebastian Cruz was maybe on the back line here. But second half lineup was Austin Pack in goal. Unnamed trialist number one. Brian Schaefer, who we now know is a member of the Rowdy squad and playing the center back role alongside Nate Dos Santos. Charlie Ostrom presumably playing the wide role on the left side, Louis Perez, Lawrence Weick, Luis Alvarez, Max Schneider, trialists, and Carson Henderlong. Cool. Throw in Carson Henderlong at striker, cross that one off. Austin Paxson goal, obviously. Schaefer and Dos Santos are both on the back line. The rest, it can kind of go a few different places. Obviously, I think Charlie Ostrom is probably on that left side. Lawrence Weick could be on that right side, James. Maybe. I think you're more likely to talk about Louis Perez being on that right side out wide, maybe in that kind of wingback role. We know him to be more of an attacker, right? Luis Alvarez is an attacking midfielder. Max Schneider is a central midfielder. I think that other trialist is probably an attacking piece alongside Carson Hunderlong. Interesting. There's a lot here as well, but there's also nothing, if that makes any sense, right? Other takeaway to mention here is Dion Akoff not being in either of these lineups. I can't imagine they were like running substitutes, right? They're playing 2 30-minute halves, right? Maybe an early injury. I don't know. If that's the case, even more the reason to keep an eye out for who can play on that right side, right? But yeah, I mean, interesting, right? I don't know. I can't really look at both of these lineups and think one's like the starting lineup and one's the backup lineup, especially this early in the season. But there's some interesting takeaways with the two trialists in the second half lineup where they're playing probably. And I think, I don't know, if I'm a betting man, James, I'm putting Louis Perez as the guy who's playing on that right side in the second half. Thoughts?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine on that one. I think he's left footed. So, it might be a situation where, they have somebody. We've seen obviously a lot of left footers on the right side. One of the most famous players in the world started that way. So, yeah, just keep that in mind. But, I don't know. It's so hard to tell here because the other issue is like, if you have a whole list of players and you're like, okay, these ones are the versatile ones. These ones are the ones where I know exactly where they are. That makes it easier to pin down. But trialist could be anywhere on the field other than in net because we know who is playing in net. Yeah. You know, it's impossible really to get even the basic shape down. Maybe they weren't playing with three at the back. I who's to say? Awesome. I would assume they were obviously, but yeah. I can't be certain about this. The last one I would have said maybe Cruz was the right wing back and Rodriguez was the left wing back, but that was my first instinct. On this one, Louis Perez could absolutely be one of the wing backs here. Whether it's right or left, even I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, just kind of comparing to the first half and kind of where I think guys are playing the first half. That's where my money is. My money's on trialist number one in the second half being a center back, a defender, right? Ostrom being on the left side because that's where we know he plays. Louis Perez, we don't really know where he's going to fit in. Maybe throw him in on the right side here. Weick, Alvarez, Schneider making up the middle three in this presumable kind of like, you know, 3-5-2 situation with Alvarez being an attacking guy, right? Behind Carson Hunderlong and trialist number two. That's my guess. Don't take it as gospel. But I feel like it's probably a good shout as to where these guys were playing. I can't imagine we're moving away from a 3-5-2, right? It just feels comfortable. Seems like what we've been, you know, known to do. And it seems like it's something that Dominic Casciato wants to do going forward. Unless there's something dramatic that he sees and he really likes the four in the back. And I don't know what that would look like, right? I think that's kind of the shape we can imagine going forward and, you know, in these preseason games. Interesting. Obviously, game finishes 2-2. The second half lineup let in at least a goal, right? And we scored two goals. I don't know. That's a good takeaway. Yeah, again, I think best takeaway is that MD Myers scored in the first preseason game of the year. I think it's awesome. Get his, goal scoring motors going early. Pedro Dolabella can win a header and score a goal. That's awesome. I don't know. It's exciting. Biggest thing is that we're excited that the guys are playing soccer, right? Getting minutes under them. Playing against a real opponent in a game that doesn't mean anything, but certainly can start to, I don't know, feel the winds of March coming around the corner now, James, you know? So cool. Tied 2-2 against MLS team. for whatever that means in a preseason game. Not bad. What else can we say about that?
I kind of just like the scoreline, first of all. I mean, it's preseason. Preseason games don't really matter. We all know that. It's about getting fit without getting injured.
Yeah.
But, hey, you wanna get the year off on the right foot. As you said, MD Meyer's got a goal. We want to build up that confidence before the season starts. And everybody who's below MLS always wants to take a little chip out of MLS. I can tell you that much. That's going to give them a little bit more of a boost when they go into training the next couple of days.
Yeah, for sure. Unfortunately, not like the powerhouse down the road, Sarasota Paradise, who pulled off the quote unquote historic win. This is unimportant. I just saw this. I was sharing our group chat. I don't even know who are they playing, James.
I went to this game. It was at IMG Academy, and I'll be perfectly honest, based on the players who were out there, I was pretty sure that it was Sarasota Paradise versus New York Red Bulls 2. It turned out that it was actually considered the New York Red Bulls first team, but I don't know how many players from the first team were on the field. Yeah. And one of them for sure was not Eric Maxim Choupo-Moting. I think I mentioned last week. Yeah. I got a picture with him in the stands. So he was not on the field. He was not even on the bench.
Yeah. Their recap that was shared in our group chat was the headline for the recap was Sarasota gets historic win over MLS side New York Red Bulls in a preseason game. That's fun. Yeah, whatever. We did not get a historic result, let's say, in our first preseason game of the year against New York City FC. But we drew with what I think is a solid squad. I don't know. Okay, James, first preseason game of the year, done. We talked about all the preseason games coming up. By the calendar that we looked at last week, it looks like their next matchup would be against St. Louis City FC tomorrow. Probably at IMG Academy. It's closed door. Wasn't mentioned. It was only seen on the MLS preseason schedule. St. Louis City SC's preseason schedule. They're training at IMG this preseason. I would assume if they're playing against the Rowdies, it's either at, you know, I'm sure they're saving Al Lang for the open games, right? I would imagine they're probably playing this closed door game against St. Louis City at IMG sometime tomorrow. So maybe we get content on the Rowdy social media about that. Maybe they just kind of keep that one quiet and just, you know, let it be another preseason game. But either way, whatever we do know, we'll talk about next week as well. This preseason game would be today if you hear this when it's recorded and put out tomorrow. But it's tomorrow if you're listening to this live. After that, open door games against the Union, Montreal, Naples, and Sarasota, all at Al Lang on February 7th, 14th, 18th, and 21st. You can check the Rowdy's website for that info. It's all out there now. I believe it's like $10 for each of those games if you're not a season ticket holder. If you're a season ticket holder, it's free. We're included. So plenty of great opportunities to watch the Rowdy's in action early on, which will be really fun. So go check it out. Get to Al Lang early. Get to Al Lang. And this was a unique experience during the Florida Cup a few years ago. Being in Al Lang when it's like cold in St. Pete, kind of fun. Bundle up in the stadium. It's a fun experience, especially this time of year when it's like really cold for whatever reason. Okay, James, let's move on to the next bit here. That's all the Rowdy's news. I guess you can tune out if you want, but we'll talk about some other USL news happening around the league, some player signings, a big piece of USL news that dropped today, which we kind of already knew and could probably infer based on other parts of the USL format. But we'll talk about the big USL news here in a minute as well. So stick around for that. But before we do that, James, I'm going to throw in a shameless plug here for the RBLR Sports Shop. Liking, subscribing to this podcast, it's free. But if you want some new threads to support your local teams and your favorite podcast, head over to shop.rblrsports.com and check out all the fun designs that have been cooked up by the guru, Eureka, behind the scenes. The link is in the description of this podcast, wherever you're listening to this podcast. You can use promo code COYR for 10% off your purchase. So again, go ahead and check out shop.rblrsports.com. All the fun designs for all the Tampa Bay sports teams over there. And again, promo code COYR for 10% off your purchase. Cool. James, let's talk about news around the league. You have a couple signings you wanted to mention. I found a few that I think are interesting for the sake of this podcast, but I'll let you kick us off here and tell us about what you've seen around the league.
Yeah, just wanted to do this quickly because, as you said, the larger news related to the league is the league itself. So we'll get to that, and we'll probably have to spend more time on it than anything related to these other teams. But let's quickly highlight Charleston Battery, who signed Sean Suber. If you are unfamiliar with the name Sean Suber, he was drafted into MLS but did not end up going there. So he signed with the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, and I think he's been with them for two seasons. He's consistently rated as one of the better or best defenders across the league. And ultimately, while Charleston has had quite a bit of an exodus over their 25 to 26 roster, Cal Jennings, MD Myers, Juan David Torres, Leland Archer, obviously, Aaron Malloy. I think I'm missing even players, but they needed to bring somebody in, right? So Sean Suber is one of the players that they have brought in to try and revamp their squad for this year. And that is a great signing. I just wanted to throw that out there. I think that he will be an important piece in their defense and whatever defense they can make of their very good playoff position that they earned over the course of last season. Ryko Arozarena, I wanted to highlight him as well. He is obviously a former Tampa Bay Rowdy. In addition to that, he has the family connections with his brother having played for the Rays previously. So somebody to keep an eye on if you are a Rowdies fan. He is on the move to New Mexico United. He was actually the starting goalkeeper for Las Vegas Lights for the most for the majority of last season. I don't know if he will be the starter for New Mexico. I believe that Alex Tumbakas was there. Starter last season, and I should have checked, but I did not, to see if he's still with New Mexico. Regardless, Ryko is going to either be challenging him or whoever the hell else they brought in to New Mexico. And honestly, I think that's a pretty good change for him because Las Vegas, as much as they have more money than they did previously, still relatively unstable. And I think New Mexico is one of the most stable teams, it seems, in the USL Championship right now. What they are working on at the most is to try and get themselves a stadium built. And then after that, we will see where they go. But yeah, good change of scenery for him. The other one that I wanted to highlight is a piece of youth national team news for the U.S. So Orange County love bringing in youth national team players from across the country. In fact, they signed another player, Jameer Johnson, from the Philadelphia Union Academy. He will be going straight into the professional ranks with Orange County for 2026. But more importantly, for our purposes, Pedro Guimaraes, who has been playing with them for, I think, two seasons as well, he's not even 18 yet. And when he turns 18, he is almost certainly going to be moving to Eintracht Frankfurt in Germany. Huge move reported by none other than Fabrizio Romano. If you are a soccer fan on Twitter at all, you have almost certainly come across Fabrizio's name there. So, he is reporting this move for Mr. Guimaraes. And I think that that is going to be not only exciting for Orange County, not only exciting for youth national team and future national team fans, but yeah, this is big news across the league. There are teams that are keeping an eye on players in the USL Championship. We already saw Josh Winder go from Louisville City to Benfica. I don't know if he's on the verge of breaking through, but he has been getting a lot of playing time with their B team. And now left back Pedro Guimaraes, always a tough position for the U.S. to fill, is moving to Germany with a very good club, with a very stable fan base and everything there. Eintracht Frankfurt, they're a very good club to hitch your wagon to, I'll say. And I think that that's awesome for him and awesome for anyone who is just around the USL ecosystem, I suppose.
Oh, didn't realize I was muted. For sure. That's exciting. Before we talk about the bigger USL news, I'll just highlight a couple other pieces that I saw happening around the league. Some moves. I think the bigger one of the last few days was Augie Williams making the move to Hartford. Obviously, Augie Williams coming off of a title year with Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Staying in the Eastern Conference, always a goal scoring threat. Someone I would have liked to see in the Rowdies at some point over the last few years, making his way to Hartford, who struggled last year, kind of found some rhythm. But I think we'll find a explosive threat, a proven goal scorer at this level. I want to say third most goals in USL championship history, Augie Williams. So Augie knows this league very well at this point. He is a consistent threat, and I don't think we'll see a huge drop off or anything in this move to Hartford. So good for him. I love him. I think he's a great player. Fun to watch. Semi-Rowdy related, Leo Fernandez's younger brother, Gustavo Fernandez, struggled to get some playing time at Naples, found his footing for a little bit, but wasn't really finding the starting 11 consistently, is making the move to Tormenta. So that's exciting for him. I've kept up with him for a little bit. Hopefully this is a move that can kind of continue to let him see the field more, continue to grow as a player. Exciting. He's a good center back. He really is. I think he just needs more time on the field to continue to grow. So exciting stuff there. Jacksonville announced three more players as well. Don't know anything about them, but good to know that they have a roster coming together, and that they're not just going to, you know, field it with four or five guys. Last bit I wanted to say was Bruno Lapa making his way back to the USL, I think is a big bit of news here. Bruno Lapa obviously is a veteran of the USL, spent the last season in, Korea, in South Korea. He was playing for, Ansan Greeners in the second division. Before that he played with Birmingham Legion for three seasons. We got to know him well there. Memphis 901 as well. And now he's making his way back to the USL after some 127 appearances before in the USL. Circling back, coming back to FC Tulsa, where he will continue to be a significant threat in that attacking midfield portion. He is a dog. Great midfielder. Glad to see he's back in the USL because I think he's fun to watch, but hopefully not too fun to watch against the Rowdies. He's had some good games against us in the past. I think that's a big bit of news that will get a little untalked about with the bigger news that came out today, even though that was a couple days ago. Those are the ones I wanted to highlight just from the latest. And this is all from USLTactics.com, just kind of skimming what's been happening around the league. Great transfer tracker there. Georgetown alum and a friend of mine, Max Jennings, making his way to Westchester is fun too, by the way. He was at Real Monarchs for a little bit, killed it over there. Good to know he's making his way to the USL. Right back. So Rowdy's keep an eye on him too. We need a right back maybe for the future. Kid's electrically fast. It's ridiculous. Okay, James, let's talk about what's going on in the USL ecosystem for 2028. That's part of the news. We have a target date again. Originally I want to say it was set for 2027, right? This
yes.
implementation yeah. of this thing. Good to know we're being realistic with ourselves and maybe right. hopefully this is realistic, right? The league being the United Soccer League, announced their promotion and relegation structure to start in 2028, with the top division being known as USL Premier. Could have probably figured that one out, right? Based on the other names of USL leagues, right? Obviously the Rowdies are in the championship, League One below, and then League Two being the summer league, college soccer, semi-pro experience, right? Not a surprise that it's USL Premier. I don't really have an issue with it. I think it's fine, right? You don't have to get too creative with the US soccer names in general, right? That's fine to be, you know, go with what works, right? This is exciting. I mean, the big news here is that it's confirmed that the target amount for that first division, USL yeah. Premier, is a target amount of 20 teams in the long run. Same thing with USL Championship, target of 20 clubs. And then League One, the only difference between League One and then Championship and Premier being that League One will have a focus on a regional format, if I'm understanding this correctly.
Probably the best that they could do, based on everything that we've seen and also how difficult it is to bring all of these clubs on. Where I'm looking at the USL League One right now. You should, with a couple more spots filled in, that's going to be ideal. Is regionalizing things.
Yeah, yeah. Poor Spokane is left by itself on an island up there. Boise kind of filling in that middle part of the country as well. Coming up next season. But yeah, you're right. I think, okay, big news, right? 2028, target date for USL promotion relegation, right? What that's going to look like? Well, 20 teams in the long run in Division One. Understanding that there's probably going to be a certain amount of expansion teams that are a part of that, right? That kind of just start in the Premier Division, with a number of teams pulled up from the Championship. Launching in 2028. Okay. At that point, you have three divisions, right? USL Championship generally stays the same, except that there's 20 teams instead of however many teams are now. 30, no, not 30 something, right? How many teams are in the Championship right now? 24, 25?
Ooh, that's a good question that we also could have looked up, but like I don't know offhand.
I feel like we should know this. Yeah. There's 12 spots, and then I want to say 25. This is easy to find out. I can look on my phone right now, but I'm not going to. And League One, the difference being in the regional format. I think that's great too, by the way, for a regional emphasis at the bottom division of this professional pyramid, right? Lower barrier to entry if you want to start a club, right? Come in, you're an investor. I think a lot of the scary part here is like the insane operating costs that come with traveling across the country all the time for these crazy away games. I think it lets you kind of ease into this a little bit. If you're starting a club or you're buying a new club or you're buying an old club, new ownership, right? It's one of those things that can help an owner ease into this kind of thing. Obviously, more money comes with being in higher divisions. So I think the idea is that probably cancels out the travel costs and higher operating costs of moving around the country. National table as well, right? So you're eliminating Eastern and Western Conference, presumably in the Premier Division, the Championship as well. That's exciting. That's fun. So there's a lot to take away here. I think those are probably the big things. I think the biggest thing, if you're looking at 2028 as a start date for all this fandango, right? it's exciting. There's still questions around, you know, like the stadiums and if U.S. soccer is going to be okay with, you know, lowering the stadium minimum of 15,000 for some teams that want to be in the Premier Division, but maybe aren't, you know, ready to make that commitment to a 15,000-16,000 person stadium by 2028. There's a lot of questions. Obviously would love the Rowdies to make that kind of investment in a stadium that can hold that amount of people and make a jump to this Premier Division or whatever. But it's, I don't know, I guess some questions are answered. I think plenty of other questions are left unanswered. But I think that's fine. I think it's exciting. I'm pretty amped about it. I hope it's something that's reasonable and that this 2028 date is a feasible start date and not just another kind of pipe dream we'll kick down the road when we get there.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously that's the biggest part of this. Getting it all off the ground. That's what we all are hoping for, obviously, but that's going to be it's a huge, huge undertaking.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. It's possible. It really is. It's possible. There's going to be a lot of money that's going to go into this across the league. You're going to need to find the right owners. I'm sure this is something they're working on, right? To invest in starting these new clubs that'll make up the rest of the Premier Division as well. You know, you're going to have to invest in stadiums, right? Rowdies are a bigger brand at this level. But Al Lang Stadium is probably not like a Premier Division stadium based on what they're looking for, right? So we'll see what this all looks like, right? I mean, we'll see how it affects the Rowdies. Obviously, it'll affect the Rowdies because we're playing in this new system, which I think is exciting and fun and entertaining and good for the growth of the game in this country. But you're right. There's a lot of work at ground level that needs to be done. So that's the big news. Check it out, uslsoccer.com. You can read about it a little bit more yourself. But that's the breakdown. USL Premier, USL Championship, USL League One, USL Premier and USL Championship being national tables, right? When this launches in 2028, USL League One being a regional format. With no, by the way, interestingly, not with the Championship and the Premier Division, there was a target of 20 teams set for both of them, right? For League One, it seems like it's left a little bit more open, which would make sense if we're doing this regional format, right? So I think you could see a larger number of teams making up League One, with, I don't know, the winners of, you know, the five regions playing or four regions playing in the playoff for the, you know, for the promotion spot or whatever, right?
Which sounds perfectly fine to me.
Yeah, it's exciting, right? It's that's how, you know, they do it in, like, I don't know, in I want to say Argentina's second division is regional, like actually their first.
I have no idea how that one works. That's that is crazy.
There's a lot going on. This is a thing that happens all around the world, right? These regional divisions and everything. It's exciting. Yeah. It's fun. Makes it easier to travel around. So, especially in this country that's as big as it is, right? Exciting stuff. So I'm amped. I mean, truly, it's exciting. It's just a matter of, like you said, putting in the legwork for these clubs and making sure it's a real feasible, possible thing in 2028. And we've heard a lot about these pipe dreams over the years and lower division soccer. And, you know, technically, this isn't a lower division soccer pipe dream anymore. We're talking about a first division soccer pipe dream now. I think you're going to have a really, really fascinating ecosystem of soccer in 2028 if this gets off the ground, right? With MLS kicking, you know, signing all the big names with a lot of the money running around there, and then a competing first division, like that's fascinating. We talked about this when this was announced originally, but it seems like there's kind of pieces starting to come together to actually make it happen. So still a lot left to do. But we're in for a fascinating next few years. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Carlos, do we have anything else related to the league now?
Nada. That's it. That's the USL news. Keep an eye. Right. This is developing. I mean, it's developing over the next several years, right? So
yeah, exactly.
Things are going to be coming out. You know, clubs are making moves and infrastructure investments. There's a lot to be interested in here.
So that will do it for the news, but we will obviously have to. That's going to be an ongoing story. We're going to have to revisit that probably multiple times over the course of this year. Yeah. I would love to get weekly updates on that, but you know that the league is not going to be putting out stuff as frequently as we need. So on we go. Let's go to our extra time segment. The U.S. Women's National Team beat Paraguay 6-0 this weekend on Saturday. It was, you know, it was a game that was fun to watch, obviously, but it doesn't give the U.S. women's national team the test that they really need. Trinity Rodman got her first international goal, and I don't know how long, based on all the injuries she's had, ups and downs in her career right now. So if you know her saga, it was very nice to see her get a goal for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Exciting. She's sticking around Washington, D.C., signed the record women's soccer contract in the U.S., which is really exciting.
Yep.
I think a little over $1 million a year. It's cool stuff. And I want to say recently crowned the team captain of the women's national team, or am I making that up?
Captain for the game on Saturday.
There you go. So exciting. Love Trinity Rodman. She's awesome.
Yeah. They will also, anybody who's watching this live, you will be able to watch the U.S. women's national team tonight play Chile at 10 o'clock. I don't know if I'm going to make it, but I did want to put that out there. If you are listening to us, obviously, then you will know what the score was. Hopefully another good win. I don't know if it'll be as big. Chile are supposed to be better, but maybe that means that we'll have a better test, obviously.
Yeah.
So with that, I think that we are done. Carlos, is there anything else before we thank the listeners and send them on their way?
That's it. I think it's time.
Thanks. All right. Let's do that. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Please follow RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, anywhere that you are, we are there too. Everywhere. I'm mostly on Twitter at RBLR James K. You can use the hashtag AskRBLR, or you can reach Carlos
at CarlosTPA10.
And with that being said, like and subscribe to our podcast. You can get the full experience on YouTube. We are also on Spotify, the iHeartRadio app, Apple and Google Podcasts. Again, wherever you are, we are there as well. So please check us out, and we will see you in the future. For one more week, closer to the season, and a preseason game in the books, I'm on you, Rowdies.
And one coming up tomorrow.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.